UK government might have shut down?
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, International Women's Day, a day without a woman. One of the reasons why I'm wearing the red, standing with the sisters. And so we'll chat about that with our panel. Also, President Donald Trump, House Republicans, leaders talk up their plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. But conservative Republicans are mad, upset, and angry. They say this law is pure trash. We'll talk about that. Civil rights leaders meet with Attorney General Jeff Sessions behind closed doors to take on the administration's divisive positions on civil rights. We'll talk with Christian Clark of the Lawyers Committee, who was at that meeting, and tell us what happened. The St. Louis mayoral primary had five black Democratic candidates who collectively received more than 60% of the vote. But a white woman will be the next mayor. We'll talk about the race and also how in the hell did less than 50,000 people in St. Louis vote in this election. We'll talk with the pastor there in the area. Plus, part three of my exclusive interview with singer-songwriter Shelby J, who opens up about the conversations she and Prince shared in his final months. Folks, you don't want to miss that. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Let's go. President Donald Trump and House Republican leaders are talking up the new GOP bill to gut and replace the Affordable Care Act. At a White House meeting with Republican lawmakers yesterday, the president again echoed the big promises he made during last year's campaign about replacing the Affordable Care Act.
I think really that we're going to have something that's going to be much more understood and much more popular than people can even imagine. It follows the guidelines I laid out in my congressional address, a plan that will lower costs, expand choices, increase competition, and ensure health care access for all Americans. This will be a plan where you can choose your doctor. This will be a plan where you can choose your plan.
Choose your doctor, choose your plan. Republicans criticized President Obama for making the same promise. Will Republicans be able to do it as well? While the new plan kills the mandated coverage that was in the ACA and instead calls for tax incentives to encourage people to purchase health insurance, it keeps a lot of the law's benefits, including barring insurers from denying coverage to people with pre-existing medical conditions. For that and other reasons, some Republicans are putting up a major fight.
Divided. We have to admit we are divided on replacement. We are united on repeal, but we are divided on replacement. What's the best way to get past this impasse? Let's vote on what we voted on before, a clean repeal. Let's separate out the replacement plans.
All right, folks, but here's what's also interesting. Now, of course, you saw President Donald Trump yesterday touting the bill released by House Republicans. But the Freedom Caucus, those conservative Republicans, they disagree. Okay, here's crazy. One of the folks in the Freedom Caucus who said today he is going to offer his own bill in the United States Senate is Senator Rand Paul. In the House, Jim Jordan said he is going to offer a bill that actually was voted on by Republicans several months ago. All Republicans voted for it. Yesterday, he said, wait a minute, we supported this bill a few months ago. Why are we supporting something different? And then what's crazy is, check this out. Go to my iPad, Shelley. This is what Donald Trump tweeted. I feel sure that my friend Rand Paul will come along with a new and great health care program because he knows Obamacare is a disaster. Okay, that's confusing. So yesterday, Trump supported the bill that Republican leadership released. Now he's touting the alternative bill that Senator Rand Paul is going to put out? Yeah, I'm confused too. Joining us on the phone from Washington, D.C., Democratic Congresswoman Ida Bitties Johnson of Texas. She is the only certified nurse in all of Congress. Also on the phone in Shreveport, Louisiana, Reverend C.L. Bryant, senior fellow with the advocacy group Freedom Works. I want to start with, I'll start with you first, Congresswoman. You're a nurse. You've been in the healthcare industry. You've seen what the Republicans have put out. Your assessment of this bill.
Well, first of all, it drops 20 million people right away from coverage. And then it costs more for the people who can survive it, and especially costs more for senior citizens. So I don't see how it can be touted as anything that's going to be better than what we have. During the campaign, Mr. Trump indicated that he would make sure that preconditions were not considered, that women would not pay more, and that children would be covered, maternity care, and all of that is dropped. And so I don't understand what he says and what he does. That's the problem I had with his great speech before Congress. All the things that he was touting, he has in place to do just the opposite. And that's exactly what's happening to this health care plan. So he rations care for millions of Americans on Medicaid, and while we're still trying to get Medicaid expansion for many. And then he includes massive cuts to Medicaid. He threatens the long-term care sovereignty of Medicare, punishes sick people by costing much more than what it does now. And it completely eliminates and defunds Planned Parenthood, which is where many poor women get their health care and examinations, and he just thinks, I guess, it's all abortion, which it isn't. And so this is dead on arrival for me. And the interesting thing about it, the most people don't want to replace it with anything. And if it's replaced by decisions to propose now, it won't be anything. And so if we had hearings before, there's not been a hearing. You couldn't even read it. They haven't even passed out the copies yet. If you wanted to read it, you could go across the street somewhere to some secret place and not take any notes and not take anything out.
I want to go to Reverend C.L. Bryant. Reverend Bryant, so Freedom Works, what's their problem with this bill? I thought Republicans wanted repeal and replace.
This is the problem with this bill, Roland, is that the same problem that we had with Obamacare in its inception 8 years ago. And that is, Americans are tired of higher taxes, more government intervention into our lives, and less freedom as far as our choices are concerned. And this is something, and she's right, it is dead on arrival because we're not getting what we were promised. And for 8 years, I've been a part of an organization that has been saying the American people are getting the bum end of a tax deal in Medicare and in this medical proposal as far as health care is concerned. And so there will be a concerted effort, as it should be, against any president, Republican or Democrat, who failed to deliver to the American people the things that are necessary for less government intervention into our lives, and also something that keeps Social Security insolvent, Medicare insolvent, and Medicaid insolvent. If you're going to solve this problem, do what you said you were going to do. And you can't replace this with something that's as good or worse than the instrument that that's the object of the ire of the people. And so this is the common ground, perhaps, that we're finding with those on the left and those on the right. And that is, both of us are feeling as though we're not getting what we want. And if this continues, if this type of thing continues in this country, you're going to see a groundswell of Americans, both on the right and the left, not against necessarily President Trump, but against those who have been in Washington so long, who are now in collusion with one another.
Congresswoman Johnson, again, what's interesting is you had the president tweeting last night about Senator Rand Paul's bill, which is supposed to be opposite of this bill. I mean, are Republicans having any clue what they're trying to present to the American people?
I don't know, because I really don't know what's in this bill. I do the position, and he knows what needs to be covered and what encumbers the coverage. It's very difficult for poor people now. Most poor people don't have access to health care coverage because their jobs do not support them by offering health care coverage. The bill that we're under now gave them that opportunity coverage. In my state, the big problem was citizenship. A lot of children needed health care, but their parents were not citizens. Just last year, 350,000 people in Texas were dumped out because the parents were not 350,000 parents because the children were citizens and the parents were not. So there were a lot of problems with the current bill. However, there was no standard for insurance companies to meet and keep prices at a decent wage, decent amount. And so they did this in order to backfire on the plan as soon as they knew that President Obama was leaving office. So that's one of the things that we did not cover because of price fixing. We didn't get the word quite right in the first bill. First bill that we've had has been more helpful to more people than any other time in the history of this country. And we would rather keep what we have and improve upon the shortcomings than to get something that's going to work against the people.
Last comment here, Reverend Bryant. So Freedom Works is against it. Freedom Caucus is against this bill. The AARP against this bill. Doesn't seem like folks are kind of happy with Republicans, your party.
Well, it is my party, but I am an American first and definitely adherent to the Constitution first. And the promise that people we have sent to office have made to us is that they would repeal this. That has been the mantra of those who have been running for office, repeal and replace. So all I'm saying, Roland, is give us what you promised us. That is what we are looking for. And we're going to see to it that we hold their feet to the fire.
Okay.
And I want to thank you for having me on.
All right, Reverend Bryant, Congresswoman Itabidi Johnson, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Let's go to our panel, Sue Zoldak, founding CEO of Zoldak Agency, Dr. Greg Carr, chair of the Department of Afro-American Studies, Howard University, Angela Peoples, co-director of Get Equal. Sue, y'all had 8 years. Y'all had 8 years to come up with a bill. Now you come up with one. The Freedom Caucus ticked off. Freedom Works is mad. AARP don't support it. The Heritage Foundation is against it. The Koch brothers are against it. This thing is dead on arrival.
Yep. Well, first of all, it's very hard to peel something back after you've given 10 million people health care through Medicaid. So we don't really have 20 million people who are shopping the new marketplace. We have 10 million people shopping the marketplace and 10 million people who are just given a handout. So
Hold up, stop. I'm sorry, hold up. Did you just say a handout?
Yes, they were given a free service from the government,
No, it's not free service from the government, because if I want to show free service from the government, that's all those defense contractors who charge the government for cost overruns. Now, that's the greatest handout. Now, when we talk about health care here, we're talking about something that many people believe is a fundamental right. So you're going to call that a handout?
I don't believe health care is a fundamental right. I think it's something that you purchase in an open marketplace. And I think for most Republicans and conservatives, what we want to see is an actual open marketplace, which means price transparency. You know, when you go to the doctor, you can't see a price list of what you're buying. You can't comparison shop whether you get an MRI scan here is cheaper than an MRI scan there. And then you would see the benefits of actually doing that in your health insurance plan.
So are Republicans going to tell all those white folks in West Virginia, Ohio, Kentucky, who right now are begging them not to mess with the Affordable Care Act, y'all gonna tell them you're getting a handout?
When you get something free from the government, it's government support. Yes.
Okay. Wow. Greg, go ahead.
Well, we pay taxes. I mean, let's set aside President Macbeth for a minute because he's not doing anything other than tweeting madly on the weekends. But what you have is a fundamental political difference. You have people in the Republican Party who basically say that being an American does not guarantee you to health care, as you said, Sue. And then on the other side, you have people who say what it means to be an American should mean more than the freedom to die because you can't afford something.
Or the freedom to choose, right, to opt in. Into a system that you're not even actually a part of.
That's right.
I think the interesting thing here that is going to be in the face of the Reverend here is that actually the American people, this is the bill that came out on Monday is a response to those protests that we saw during that first recess. It's a response to those town halls, the people that said that they are covered by, they need to keep their Medicare, they need to keep their, they like their, quote, Obamacare, they like to have access to the doctors and the services and the marketplace that's set up for them now. And so I think what we're seeing right now is Republicans actually being responsive to where the people are, which is being much more in favor of what they have now versus an option that seems to be ambiguous at best and worse.
All right, folks, hold tight 1 second. Coming up next on News One Now, voting rights and policing were just two of the issues civil rights leaders discussed with Attorney General Jeff Sessions yesterday in a closed-door meeting. We'll talk about that, but also Fort Worth, two black cops are right now, folks, desk duty because they are being accused of leaking that video of the mother who was taken down by a police officer there. We'll have that in our headlines next, News 19 TV 1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now.
The Supreme Court has ruled that racial bias during jury deliberations violates an individual's right to a fair trial. The case involved a Mexican-American man who was convicted in 2007 of groping two teenage girls. Two jurors told the judge in the trial that a third juror said Rodriguez was guilty of sexual assault because, quote, Mexican men take whatever they want, unquote. Colorado, like many other states, forbids overturning convictions due to statements made during jury deliberations. But in writing for the majority opinion in the 5-3 decision, Justice Anthony Kennedy said, quote, blatant racial prejudice is antithetical to the functioning of the jury system and must be confronted in egregious case like this one, despite the general bar of the no impeachment rule, end quote. The NAACP is applauding the decision. In a statement, Bradford M. Baird, the organization's general counsel, said, quote, when there is credible evidence that racial bias has infected a jury's verdict in a criminal case, any concerns regarding the efficient administration of the criminal justice system must give way to the necessity to ensure the fair and impartial administration of that system. And, of course, no doubt that Justice Clarence Thomas was one of the folks who did not vote with the majority. That is no shock. WikiLeaks is back in the news with a document dump that claims the CIA targeted gadgets like smartphones as part of a surveillance program. WikiLeaks released over 8,000 pages, with the founder calling the release the, quote, largest ever publication of confidential documents of the CIA. The documents reveal that the CIA has the ability to break into devices and intercept messages before they can be encrypted. Another reported tactic, turning smart TVs into microphones to record conversations. Infamous whistleblower Edward Snowden calls the leaks a genuinely big deal. Former CIA Director Michael Hayden calls the release dangerous.
If it is that, it would be very, very damaging.
All of the intelligence community's activities are directed at foreign targets, foreign terrorists, and foreign government officials overseas.
Julian Assange said WikiLeaks published the information in part because of concerns over CIA overreach. He says there needs to be a conversation about whether the tactics exceed the CIA's mandated powers. Folks, we have new information in connection to the controversial arrest of a mother and her two teenage daughters in Fort Worth, Texas, in December. Two top police officials, both African-American, are now under investigation for allegedly leaking the body camera video of the arrest. The body camera footage shows the moment Officer William Martin slammed Jacqueline Craig to the ground and later handcuffing her 19-year-old daughter. The craziest part of the story is that Craig had called police for help after a neighbor allegedly choked her young son. Assistant Police Chief Abdul Pridgen and Deputy Chief Vance Keys are also accused of releasing the personnel records of Martin. activist and writer Sean King then posted the records on Facebook. Both men are now on detached duty, which means they have been temporarily relieved of their command during the investigation. The attorney for Pridgen calls the investigation, quote, a vicious and unwarranted attack on his client. He also says Pridgen did not release the video and has no information on who might have released it. Officer Martin was suspended for 10 days after an internal investigation found he had used excessive force and was disrespectful. He's appealing the punishment. Craig and her daughters were arrested, but the charges against them were later dropped. The neighbor who allegedly choked her son was finally charged with a misdemeanor. Also, the attorneys for the Craig family said they did not get the videotape from those two officers. Folks, it'll be at least another 2 years before Flint, Michigan will be able to treat its water again. As according to Mayor Karen Weaver, who wrote to the officials of the Environmental Protection Agency, Mayor Weaver blames the delay on construction and the testing process for a new water treatment plant. A portion of her letter says, quote, to expedite completion of the project and minimize costs, a design-build project delivery method is proposed. Based on this approach, an August 2019 completion date is anticipated for the treatment plant improvements, end quote. Flint's water problem started in 2014 when the city's water source was switched to the Flint River. The corrosive water caused lead from pipes to get into the water supply. The problems didn't make national news until last year. Flint is currently using water from Detroit's Great Lakes Water Authority, but that agreement expires this summer. Also, many residents still use bottled water, and the state still recommends residents use filtered water for cooking and drinking. And residents are still having to pay for the bad water. As we celebrate Women's History Month, a woman in Mobile, Alabama is making history of her own by becoming the first black woman major in the Mobile Police Department. Berenice Dixon was recently promoted within the department. She's the first black woman to reach the milestone in one of Alabama's largest police forces. Dixon credits those who came before her for motivating her to continue to work up the ranks.
But I also have to acknowledge the efforts of those that paved the way in order for me to obtain this rank. You don't get where you are by yourself. I've been honored to work with a lot of people in the Mobile Police Department, some that are still here, some that are not here.
Dixon is a 28-year veteran of the police force. Next on News One Now, civil rights leaders take on Attorney General Jeff Sessions on his administration's divisive policies in a closed-door meeting. We'll talk with Christian Clark from the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under the Law about that discussion. Also, a Georgia Republican-controlled legislature is expected to pass a racial gerrymandering bill that is being rammed down the throats of Democrats in order to keep their majority status. We'll talk to Democratic State Rep. Carolyn Hughley about this. All that next, News One Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Leaders of the six civil rights organizations met with Attorney General Jeff Sessions yesterday in the Department of Justice. The meeting was set up to express their concerns about several civil rights issues and the latest actions by the Department of Justice under the Trump administration. Here's a portion of their news conference held after the meeting with Sessions.
We said to the Attorney General that we meet with him on the 160th anniversary of the Dred Scott decision. On the 52nd anniversary today of Bloody Sunday. And for us to be meeting with him, talking about these issues has to be seen in the historic context that brings about the necessity to continue to fight, no matter who or what party's in office, to protect the equal rights, particularly of those of us that have been legally discriminated against. This was not a photo op meeting with black leaders. This is the beginning of to talk to people that will disagree and will say why and give this administration pause to understand that all Americans must be heard without equivocation or compromise. We were not hostile, but we showed holy indignation, and we continue to be indignant about any threat to our civil rights.
He is now the Attorney General of the United States. He is the Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the United States. He is the Chief Enforcer of the nation's civil rights laws. And that duty obligates him to affirmatively seek out investigations and areas where voter discrimination laws have been passed and to prosecute those laws. The communities that we represent expect that from the Department of Justice. We do believe that we laid out for him what are the critical issues as it relates to both voting and to policing reform and the expectation of African American and Latino communities around this country.
We came to present the agenda for civil rights that we want this Justice Department to embrace in 2017. Number two, we came to underscore that we will resist any rollback. We will protect our progress. We will resist any effort to roll back the hands of time when it comes to civil rights, human rights, or civil rights enforcement. I want to underscore the fact that the nation's civil rights agenda is not just the agenda for the six of us or for the organizations we lead, but we think it is an agenda embraced by millions of Americans across the nation who want to live in a nation that is fair, that is free, that is just, and that treats all Americans equally.
All right, folks, let's get right to it with Christian Clark. She, of course, is the head Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under the Law. All right, how you doing? So how'd the meeting go? How long did y'all meet?
The meeting lasted about 45 minutes. Mr. Sessions was joined by about three members of his senior staff, and we got right down to the issues that we came to press him on. We led with a focus on ongoing voter suppression and voting discrimination across the country. We let him know that we were deeply troubled by the department's 11th hour decision to pull out of the longstanding challenge to Texas's voter ID law. The Justice Department had stood alongside my organization, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, the Legal Defense Fund, Brennan Center, and other groups are in that case, arguing that this law is the most discriminatory voter suppression law that's been put on the books in the last few years.
His response?
No response. No response, but we let him know that we're watching closely and we do not expect this Justice Department to abandon its job to enforce our voting rights laws and to fight voter suppression. And we ask that he push back against this narrative of vote fraud, that he counsel the president against creating this vote fraud task force that they've been talking about for weeks.
He also, last week, meeting with the state's attorney generals, said they were going to be pulling back on the lawsuits against police departments trying to correct them. Was he questioned about that?
Absolutely.
And did he give any response?
We talked about policing reform and we confronted him on the doubts that he's expressed about the continued use of consent decrees. We let him know that the Chicago Police Department matter is out there. Under Loretta Lynch and Vanita Gupta, the Justice Department laid out a report, hundreds of pages of findings of a broken police department that is in need of reform.
What was his response?
He said that he's very concerned that the department's work has had a demoralizing effect on police officers. But what he needs to recognize is that police brutality has had a demoralizing effect on
communities.
Our communities. So we pushed him there and had a spirited back and forth. We then moved to the travel ban and made clear that Monday's reissuance of the ban imposing the Muslim ban is unconstitutional, that it violates civil rights, that it invites racial profiling here in the United States, that it stereotypes communities. I specifically asked that he revoke that executive order, that he counsel the president to revoke the order. We then moved to hate crimes and said that the Justice Department's voice has been absent and missing in the wake of the spike of hate crimes that we've seen around the country.
Right. Yeah, thank you, first of all, for your work, Attorney Clark. And as our sister Sherrilyn Ifill said, we know that he's Attorney General, so you're obligated to meet with him. Two questions very quickly. Number one, the Civil Rights Division. What are his plans for that? And number two, do you really expect this man to have not known anything you laid out to him yesterday in advance? Mm.
You know, it's interesting. Reverend Sharpton did raise the Eric Garner matter, and the Attorney General did indicate to us that he needed to check on the status of that matter. I mean, he's 4 weeks on the job. It does not seem that he has fully embraced from A to Z all the work that's happening across the Civil Rights Division. But we did lift up the fact that Eric Garner's matter is still pending. We know that there is still an open federal investigation, and we don't know the results of it. And he did commit to us that he would check on the status of the Garner matter.
And a division head for civil rights?
We closed the meeting by presenting him with a letter that laid out the criteria that we think we need to see in somebody leading the division, somebody deeply committed to enforcement of civil rights laws.
Angela.
I will also echo the thanks. I don't think I could have sat in that meeting, so appreciate you for doing that. I'm curious,
you
given...
You could have sat in the meeting.
No, I could not. I don't think I could have done it. I appreciate you, though. The meeting probably would have ended a little differently. But I want to ask you, you know, it sounds like that you laid out some very important issues of the case. He was mostly unresponsive, or at the very least, maybe we'll look into it. What is the strategy moving forward? Is there a look at some lower level courts or other areas where we may be able to move on the state route to get some changes?
We will fight and we will resist. There's a movement on playing in the streets, but this movement also needs to play out in the courts. And so we will fight. Anytime this administration does something that rolls back civil rights of African Americans, we will resist. We will file lawsuits. We will keep them tied up in courts for the next 4 years. And I told Mr. Sessions that if they do not revoke this travel ban, that the dozens of suits around the country that will bog down the resources of this Justice Department for the next 4 years.
Sue?
You know, I agree with everyone on the panel saying I commend you for setting up this meeting, for going into it in such a well-prepared way, for having the letter, for having all the issues lined up that you wanted to talk about, knowing that you only had 45 minutes. I think you guys got a lot accomplished. You know, I take issue with the characterization that non-responsive, you know, is a negative thing. I think that he listened, at least from the reports that I heard from people who are at the meeting, that I think this kind of informed intellectual dialogue, debate, back and forth.
Is an action on all of the things that she listed up until now, and his silence in this conversation is an indication of where his head
Senate
is in his
He's been in the Senate for
exactly.
decades.
This meeting and his lack of response, it
but
sounds like, was
fight.
Not,
but
was not
fight.
The first indication of
well,
who's
right.
Attorney General Sessions is.
I mean, he wasn't there to cause a debate.
No,
he was there to get the
photo op, but they're going to fight.
It's week four on the job. We are going to keep pressure to bear every day that man is in office. Those are our taxpayer dollars at work, and we know that civil rights issues continue to play out and beleaguer our communities every day. So we'll fight every day. We're not going to make it easy on them.
All right, Kristen, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, folks, next on News One Now, we'll talk with Reverend Carlton Lee of the National Action Network about the tight St. Louis mayoral primary on Tuesday. 5 black Democratic candidates, they ran, they all lost, they split the black vote. And how in the world did less than 50,000 people in the entire city vote in this primary? Plus, artist Shelby J shares private conversations she had with Prince in his final months in part 3 of my exclusive interview. 23 before top of the hour, News One Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
St. Louis could have had a black mayor, but 5 African Americans ran for the Democratic primary, all lost in a tight battle, folks. Here are the numbers that took place on yesterday. Alderwoman Lela Crewson won last night in a very close race in a crowded Democratic field. You see the numbers there. Crewson won. Tashara Jones actually came in second. She lost by about 1,000-some-odd votes. She's a city treasurer and former state representative in St. Louis. Lost by less than 2% to Crewson. Also, of course, many folks know Antonio French, who gained national popularity, of course, after what took place in Ferguson. He came in fourth there as well. But what's more troubling, only about 50,000 residents in St. Louis voted in the Democratic primary, and a significant black population. Let's go to a pastor who is there. Of course, he is there with the National Action Network. Joins now via FaceTime in St. Louis is Reverend Carlton Lee. Reverend Carlton Lee, first and foremost, did anybody say having five black candidates in the race was going to likely split the black vote, therefore making it hard for an African-American to win the mayoral race?
Man, you know what, Roland? First of all, let me say good morning to you. Enjoy your show. Love talking to you. Number one, yeah, there was conversation about it. A very good friend of mine, Attorney Gerald Christmas, was one who was very vocal about it. He said, five candidates, we all need to just come together and at least figure out who would be the best candidate to serve the African-American community, as well as the city of St. Louis as a whole. And we just couldn't get it together. Tashara said it actually yesterday that, you know, if some of the men in the primary race, if they would have just got out a lot sooner, we would have not had this type of issue. And it was almost like a crab mentality in politics again.
But what in the world? 50,000? That's it? Because the reality is here. Whoever wins a Democratic primary runs against a Republican candidate April 4th for the general election. But whoever wins a Democratic primary in St. Louis is the next mayor.
Pretty much so. Pretty much so. And Lida Cruzan is exactly the exact replica of the current mayor that we have now, Mayor Francis Slay. Same policy ideas, nothing innovative, nothing new. It's just the same mundane task that will be handed, and tax abatements for the rich and the property developers. But, you know, she has one issue where she wants to criminalize being homeless. So we're going to run these same exact issues that we've been seeing the last 16 years. We're more than likely going to see them for the next 4 years if Lida Cruzan gets in.
And so what's next? I mean, are black leadership in St. Louis having a post discussion? Do they plan to have those today saying, guys, look, if we want to talk about how do you change things, it's not going to happen running five folks for a Democratic primary.
Absolutely, man. You know, and I believe that should have been a conversation that should have been had prior to this primary election, but it's definitely one that is needed now. I think everyone has gotten their political spotlight. They've gotten the spotlight on them, and I think now we should come to the place of sitting down at a drawing board and figuring out, okay, what does the leadership in St. Louis, number one, what does it look like? Number two, what is our ask? You know, we I think we need to sit down and really have a roundtable discussion with the leaders in the city of St. Louis, as well as those up and coming leaders in the city of St. Louis, to find out what direction we would like to see the city to go forward.
Reverend Carlton Lee, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Go to our panel real quick here. I'm sorry. This is where voter education, voter registration matters. I mean, you're talking about elected leadership, less than 50,000 votes.
Yes.
With that many people in the field, that's atrocious.
Well, I mean, first, I was going to say very quickly that, you know, you can go, less than 50,000 people can go to a Cardinals game, a baseball game. Where's Tom Perez? Where Akeem Ellison? They had the election in Atlanta 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Somebody should have been around the DNC, either to mediate. Now, they're talking about local elections. This, again, shows us the political immaturity that we still face as our big challenge. Why have a meeting today? You should have had that meeting weeks ago, and the DNC should have been involved if they claim to be growing this party from the grassroots level.
I think that point is exactly right, and also from my understanding, I wanted to ask Reverend Lee, but it's my understanding is that while turnout was 50,000, it was higher this year than, I believe it was at 28% this year, and as opposed to 22% in the last election. So I think that folks are attributing that. I'm not saying that that's okay and that's enough, but I think that it's important to note that the candidacy of Tashara Jones, especially, and the attention that she got for going after the St. Louis Dispatch for being racist, really brought people out and got people excited. If there was an additional support from the Democratic Party, even before we got to Election Day, they often like to show up 10 days before the vote. Before that, that could have actually bolstered up Tashara's rise, could have actually added on to the infrastructure there. But again, this is a lack of engagement from the party.
But, you know, I don't care what city you run in. If you run five African-American candidates,
absolutely,
you're going to split the vote.
But again,
that's not party leadership. It's also black leadership. Because that was the point also when Harold Washington ran in Chicago,
absolutely,
1983. Black leadership said, we're going to coalesce around one candidate and not split it. But more importantly, it's still sad if we're saying going from 22 to 28, and we should be happy about it. That still means that 28% of the city elected the next mayor. That's right. Crazy.
That's right.
Speaking of elections in Georgia, Republican majority state Senate is set to vote on a bill passed by the House that would redraw 9 of their districts in an effort to protect their majority. If the bill passes, it would redraw the lines for 8 Republican-held seats in 1 Democratic district. The changes would reduce the number of people of color in districts where these Democratic-leaning voters have threatened to oust Republican incumbents. Critics say the move is illegal under the Equal Protection Clause, which bars states from using race as the, quote, predominant factor in redistricting. Joining us right now from via FaceTime from Columbus, Georgia, Democratic State Representative Carolyn Hughley, the Minority Whip. Representative Hughley, I got to ask you, this is, again, this is by and we see this around the country, by packing black folks in districts, removing them out of Republican districts. This is an effort to make sure that they're not going to boot that Republican out of office.
Let me first say good morning, and you're absolutely right. When we pack African-American voters into districts and remove them from competitive districts, that's the result that you're going for.
And when you talk about that, the motivation here, I mean, they're very blatant with what they're trying to do.
Yes, they came out with the bill in 2 days, and they voted it out of committee. There was no public comment. There's no explanation as to why they
no discussion.
No discussion. No public comment from any member of the public. They brought it into committee. They voted it out. It was on the floor the next day, and the Republican majority voted for these new map changes.
How do you stop it?
Well, of course, it's going to go to the Senate, and we're hopeful that members of the public will express their concern about it. I don't know if we can stop it with numerical numbers because the Republicans are in the majority, but we will have to have all of our options open and look to the courts to find relief for this kind of activity. This is a continuation of what they did in 2015. 2015, they tweaked these districts, and our candidates did such a great job. They almost won in 2016, so they came back to tweak some of these districts again. So it's a testament to the fact that our leader and our team here in Georgia had good candidates, and we don't mind running in competitive districts, because we'll put our people out there and we'll put them to work. But what this amounts to is moving the goalposts every time we get close.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. We certainly appreciate it. Carolyn, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, Sue, what's up? Why can't Republicans compete fairly to racially gerrymandered districts? And again, this is not just Georgia. We see this in North Carolina. That was one of the lawsuits there. We saw this in Texas. We've seen this other places where literally the removal of African Americans out of areas, trying to pack them in the district so they have no impact on Republican lawmakers.
That's right. Look, I think it was a week ago that we had a conversation about gerrymandering and about wanting to redraw districts so that an African-American community could have better representation in their elected state house.
No,
so
actually, no,
stop.
Actually, you're wrong. No, you're absolutely wrong there. The discussion that we had dealt with what took place in Pasadena, where Latinos were impacted. The discussion we also had dealt with at-large districts, what happened there, and this is historic, where you've seen this over the years, since the Voting Rights Act of 65, where you've had single-member districts, because what many places in the South did, they had all the positions being at-large, which meant that a larger white population elected folks and ignore the black population. That's how you created single-member districts on city councils as well as county commissioners' courts. That's been totally different than removing African-Americans out of districts, packing them into Democratic districts so they have no impact on Republican districts. Sue, totally different.
That's right. In fact, Roland, it's interesting because Georgia, of course—
I've only been covering this, since I was 14.
No, he's right. I mean, this is the political strategy, right? The Supreme Court has decided that political gerrymandering is okay, but this is a proxy
this
for
is
racial gerrymandering. That's exactly right. But you see in Georgia versus Ashcroft, you see it, as you say, Roland, in voting rights law, the Shaw versus Reno line, what they do is diffuse the number of blacks. But now what we have to do, tying it back to what you raised in St. Louis, is get registered and go out there and vote, because the demographics in Georgia are against this white supremacy.
Angela, 30 seconds.
Well, my question just back to Sue. This is not—it's not just about the racial gerrymandering. It's also about the voter ID laws. It's about restricting the polling places and college campuses. The Republicans know that the American people are actually not on their side. The demographics are changing; they're not on their side, and so they're changing the rules.
That's right.
And it's very simple. If you want to compete, compete. But don't play the racial games, because it's not cute. All right, y'all, up next, News One Now, Shelby J talks about her close relationship with Prince in the months before he died. Part three, my exclusive interview with her next, News One Now, TV One.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, y'all, part three of my exclusive interview with singer-songwriter Shelby J, where she shares some of the conversations she had with Prince over the 10 years, but also in the months before he died. When you think about musicians and entertainers, mm-hmm. and a lot of people who are performers,
yeah.
but there are very few people who are at such a high level, an iconic level, that other artists would bow down in their presence.
Yeah, he was always
one of those people. I mean, other cats who are major,
yeah.
and you're like, you know, you like
Tom,
a groupie.
I watched Tom Cruise lose it. I mean, the biggest stars, when he would walk into a room, it's like he was the biggest star. The biggest stars became fans, straight up fans. Like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, it's Prince. Or they'd be trying to act real cool, but it's like, oh my God, it's Prince. And they're looking, watching, you know, as we go by. But for me, the cool thing was, is he, I was always Shelby, and he always let me be Shelby. And from all the people telling me, you know, be like this, do this, I was raised, my mother and father raised me to, you know, they always said, wherever you go, you take yourself with you. You're gonna be who you are wherever you go. And I think Prince love that about me, that I kept it so real with him, and I was a country girl, am still a country girl, and being around him in that space, sometimes I would sit and think about myself singing back in Greensboro somewhere, and I would sit and I would look at him, because we talked a lot about everything that I did and how I got there and places I played and everything. He goes, everything you did was to bring you to this place. It was all part of your journey. It had to happen to bring you here. You're supposed to be here. You're supposed to be in this time and space. And I'm like, okay. He goes, and we're going to the BET Awards next week. I'm like, all right. And you're going to be going with me. And that was kind of like my coming out to the world. And I was just like, Prince is, you know, my girlfriend Jania, Frederick told me, she said, we're all fans of Prince, but Prince was a fan of yours. How does that feel? And I was like, wow. You know, it's just, I feel honored and humbled and grateful and just beyond thankful that he chose me to be in his space. He taught me so much. He's still blessing me. Even though he's not here physically, he's still blessing me, and doors are opening, and I have this worldwide fan base. This is my first record I'm about to put out.
Y'all ready? Let's go on with this superpower. Come on.
And people know me all over the globe, and he did that. He gave me that platform. So I'm super thankful, you know, and it's hard to even put into words, but sometimes I feel them everywhere, you know, and I'm like, I listen to the music and I'm like, that's Prince. I'm like, that was my boy. That's my brother. You know, even driving up here, you know, we're listening to like Raspberry Beret, and I listen to all his music different because of our personal relationship. But I'm like, God, you chose me to be in his space. He chose me to be in his space. And I'm just super grateful for that, because there were, of all of the singers, there are a lot of singers that hit higher notes than I hit, singers that, you know, do all this kind of stuff, but for some reason, he chose me to be in that space with him. And I'm like, this is Prince.
Van Jones said the final year and the final months of his life were interesting and unique.
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting and unique. He was always, I would always say, Prince was always way ahead of us. He was way ahead of everybody. So we'd be in 2015, he was already in like 2030, 2040. He just knew things, and you could see it. You could see it, you could feel it. And he would say a lot of things. I think that he knew, this is just me personally saying this, I've never even said this before, I think that he knew his time on this earth was limited. I think that he knew he had some things he wanted to do and get done. We talked about the piano and a microphone tour. He had done everything. He had done the big bands. He had done this. He had done that. And he came to me almost apologetic, like, I'm about to do this because I wasn't going to be working. He was concerned about me, you know, not, he goes, but this will give you time to finish your record. This will give you time to do the things you need to do. I'm like, absolutely. He goes, it's just going to be me and a piano and a microphone. I was like, that's beautiful, because people could get to see the part of Prince that I got to see. They could get to get that intimate part of him. He talked about his dad. He talked about stuff he never talked about before. And this was all leading up to, you know, April, everything leading up to that. Even the first concert in January that I was there with him, and we hung out all night long, and we talked about life, and we talked about the future, and just, I played my record for him, all but two songs, and he was just watching him listen and take it in and tell me, oh, you need to fix this part or do this. But it's like he was giving me instruction, almost like he knew he needed to tell me things. It's something, because my dad, who passed in 2010, did some similar things about 5 months leading up to his death. There was, and I could really look at those parallels because I went through it with my father. So yeah, it was really, really interesting. I think that I think he knew he had something to say, and I think that piano and microphone tour was his opportunity to do that, because he got super deep, super personal, stuff he never shared with anybody. He was sitting there sharing stories about his childhood and about, you know, like I said, his father, and he just opened up. He was like, it's my time to just open up. You know, you could feel it.
Tomorrow, Shelby J talks about the day Prince died and how her world changed. Back in 60 seconds on News 1 Now TV 1.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Hey, Bars Kojo, Lester Holt, Leon, and Kenny Smith. I gotta go. Holla!
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now. With Roland Martin.